I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date.
The spread of coronavirus has monopolized the world's attention, and people have a lot of questions, understandably. Today, our team of experts looks to answer them and clear up some of the panic. And we'll be trying something new. It's a virtual town hall on Facebook Live. Go to the KCUR Facebook page to join the conversation there. First up on today's show, we'll look at the medical side of COVID-19 and what doctors want you to know about protecting yourself and the people and pets around you. Later, we explore how the coronavirus could affect Kansas City's economy and if it might disrupt your spring break plans. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Good morning and welcome to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. So much concern, so much uncertainty, so much confusion. This hour, an Up to Date special aimed at answering your questions about the virus that's working its way across the country. We'll spend our first half today looking at the medical side of the coronavirus. In our second half, we'll look at the local economic impact of the disease, what it means for businesses, and how it might be affecting your plans for spring break. There's a lot flying around right now, and hopefully we can clear the air on some of the myths and half-truths that have popped up about this experience that we're all enduring. You have several ways to connect with us today. Here's one way. Text the word COVID, that's C-O-V-I-D, to 816-601-4777. Again, 816-601-4777. You'll get a prompt to put in your question, and we'll get to many of those questions as we possibly can today. Joining us to answer your medical questions surrounding the coronavirus are Dr. Sarah Boyd. She's an infectious disease specialist over at St. Luke's. Dr. Boyd, so nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Wael Murad is the chief medical health officer with the Health Partnership Clinic that provides care to individuals regardless of ability to pay. Dr. Murad, it's nice to have you too.
Good morning. Thank you, Steve.
You can also join us today via KCUR's Facebook page where our show will be streaming today. And you can call us the old-fashioned way, 816-235-2888. Our phone number here. Remember, you can text us at 816-601-4777. I want to get to some text questions already that have already come in to Up to Date this morning. Probably understandably, a number of people have questions concerning what this one person had to ask. I do expect to contract the virus, this caller asked. Should they be expecting to contract the virus? Dr. Boyd, what do you have to say about that?
So I think this has been kind of a rapidly changing situation, especially here in the United States. And I think it's important for people just to kind of be aware of what's going on geographically. If they have underlying health conditions, they need to think about that.
But what are the odds they're actually going to contract this thing, any one of us?
So currently in Kansas City, we do not have community-wide spread of COVID-19. So currently, but I do think it's important to pay attention, as we've seen with the experience in King County, Washington.
Yeah. Dr. Murad, what would you say in response to that?
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind some basic precautions. There are a lot of common sense measures that are important to exercise, such as not attending large gatherings, and if you're sick, to stay home from work, and hygiene measures as well. So I think that it's also important to keep in mind that out of all patients who contract COVID-19, 4 out of 5 patients will have a mild illness where they don't even need to go to the hospital or the emergency room.
I'm wondering, though, what are the odds that each of us face here as we go through this experience that we might contract this thing ourselves?
You know, Steve, that's a great question. I think one of the challenges that as healthcare providers we're facing is that there isn't a lot of great information. You know, we have the best sources, which are the CDC and World Health Organization. And as far as actual statistics that will help us on the ground, those are things that we're continuously looking for.
Okay. Another question here via our text line today. I'd like experts to please review and focus on all the most important measures we should be taking to avoid contracting the virus. Dr. Boyd, we've already touched on some of them here this morning.
Yeah. And you know, I think the very most important thing is to wash your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Soap and water, wash your hands, avoid touching your face because a lot of the COVID-19 is felt to spread by droplet precautions. So either touching a surface and then touching your nose or your mouth. So that's why hand washing is so important. Covering your coughs, so sneeze into your elbow.
And you hear a lot of talk about washing your hands for 20 seconds. What's that about?
So part of that is just the time needed to really cover all areas of your hands. You know, you can think about you just turn on the water and run your hand underneath it. That's not as good a job as really being sure you scrub near the fingernails, between the fingers, the palms, and the backs of the hands. So it's really just that time and attention to doing it well.
Another question on our text line this morning. Again, if you text the word COVID, COVID, to 816-601-4777, you can connect with our show today. This question, Dr. Morad, what is the latest on the number of testing kits in the area? We're hearing competing information from different news sources. What can you tell us about that?
Sure. Well, I can tell you, Steve, that I do not know as far as the number of testing kits that are available locally. We know that there is one patient who is confirmed to have had who's contracted COVID-19 in the Johnson County area. Anyway,
who's at the KU Med Center right now, I believe.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so, in addition, there are 13 patients under investigation who potentially may have COVID-19 and those test results are pending. So different healthcare organizations will have various capabilities as far as testing.
You know, some folks texted us with questions about travel, Dr. Boyd. Is it advisable to stay in a hotel, specifically at the end of April in Omaha, Nebraska?
Well, I think this is a rapidly changing situation. So for travel, I think CDC has recommended if you're in high-risk groups, so older than age 60, or you have underlying medical conditions such as heart disease, lung disease, or diabetes, that you're at higher risk if you would contract it. CDC has a great Traveler's Health website that you can put in your city you're going to, and you can have some information. I think you know, that would be a way to really just keep tabs on what's going on at that local place. But I really do think you should consider how essential travel is and the location.
But you really get a sense that people are really struggling with future plans, what to do here, what's the right thing to do. A lot of uncertainty out there.
And I think we're seeing that, you know, a lot of medical conferences have been canceled because they realize that maybe that's, you know, physicians and other healthcare providers are really busy at their local site, as well as that extra attention to travel and if it's necessary or essential or non-essential.
Dr. Morad, will it be okay to fly domestically by Memorial Day weekend, specifically to Charlotte, North Carolina from KCI?
Well, I think there are a few things to consider. I think one is how critical is it to make that trip? And another thing is, so we know that the patients that are most affected by COVID-19 are elderly and those that have significant chronic medical conditions,
right,
like chronic respiratory disease and cardiac disease. So if there's a patient who's at particularly high risk for having complications for COVID-19, and if the reason for the travel isn't critical or necessary, then I would have some second thoughts about making that trip.
What if somebody doesn't fit that category? They're relatively healthy. They want to travel in the next couple months to come. In general, what would you say to them?
Well, I think with this issue, while we want to take it seriously, it's important not to panic. And so I think part of that is continuing to live your life. And if you are at average risk, so you're not in that category that we talked about, then I think practicing those basic precautions are important. Just like Dr. Boyd said, most important of which is hand washing. So I think if you take that into, if we're vigilant in that during our trip, then we're doing everything we can.
What about local doctors, Dr. Boyd, and healthcare professionals getting briefings each day from the NIH and the CDC? How helpful are those? Are doctors tuning in each day, or what are you seeing among your colleagues out there?
So our approach at St. Luke's Health System is we have a wide multidisciplinary team that's really focused on COVID-19 preparedness. And so there are numerous webinars, numerous you know, podcasts that come out from reliable sources, updates, websites that update regularly. And so using all of those different sources of information, you know, we're trying to really stay up to date, but then also how does that apply to us here in Kansas City?
Mm-hmm. Are you watching those briefings, Dr. Morad, each day, or how do you approach this?
Absolutely. So our administration at our organization is very engaged as far as communicating closely with the different state and local agencies on the Kansas side. Mm-hmm. And so in addition to a number of conference calls and outreach that we've done to our partners, we've also done a number of in-services for our medical staff so that they're equipped with the knowledge needed to keep our patients and their colleagues safe.
Have you seen anything quite like this, a medical crisis like this in the last decade, or does this compare to anything else in your recent experience, Doctor?
Well, for myself, and to me, this harkens back to the Ebola outbreak, although the geography certainly was very different, and there are a lot of different characteristics. But I think the similarity is with that for me are and how preparedness is so key, mm-hmm. and being proactive is so important in in terms of making sure that the public is well educated and we have the best public health policies in place.
Dr. Boyd, a risky question here. I'm going to ask it anyway. Is all of this entire crisis, is it getting too much attention? Is it generating too much ill at ease out in the public, or what's your overall sense?
I do think that it's really important for people to be aware, but I think preparedness should really be the focus. You know, how can you protect yourself? Those hand washing and avoiding going out if you're ill, or avoiding someone who is ill, visiting, and sort of those protective measures. I think that it, you know, some of the information out and it's just on every news feed, every clip, can make people feel anxious, mm-hmm. as we've seen, you know, reported in some of the media. But I really think preparedness and just being aware and precautious is the best approach.
I mean, we're getting these reports that Seattle is a ghost town at night. I'm just wondering, what do you make of that?
Well, I think some of that's fear, and certainly you can imagine.
Is it appropriate given where we are? The answer may be yes. Yeah,
I think for high risk situations, for those patients that have the chronic medical conditions,
sure.
and really at risk, I think that may be appropriate if you have a high likelihood of illness in your community, like they see there. You know, I do think as we move forward and see how responses are, we know from China and some of the other places that have larger outbreaks, Italy, that, you know, some of that social distancing they talk about or you hear about on the news can be helpful. And so there are lots of public health approaches that may help, but that really depends on what's going on at your local geographic area.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to a special edition of Up to Date. We're focusing today, as so many media outlets are around the country, on the coronavirus, how to prepare for it, what you should be thinking about as this situation continues to unfold. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. Let's go to Ken from Olathe. Ken, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. My question is, how do we know that we're not having community spread in Kansas City if we're not testing a statistically significant number of people and actually getting the results back?
Interesting. What do we know about the possibility, Dr. Morad, of community spread that maybe we're even unaware of right now?
So certainly that is a possibility. To be clear, there is no known community spread on the Kansas side. That one case was a patient who did have recent travel. And so,
is that possible? Could there be spread and we just don't know about it because we're not testing?
You know, I think one of the challenges is that a mild case of COVID-19 is very hard to differentiate from the flu. And so you really can't say no, I would say. And so I think it's important for healthcare providers, and that's how we see our role on the Kansas side, is when we see patients who we suspect may possibly have COVID-19, to quickly identify them and get in touch with the state agencies. Short of that happening, going forward, I think it'll be very difficult to know the extent to which community spread would be occurring.
So we're operating blind here in a lot of ways in response to Ken's question.
Well,
because there's not that much testing.
Well, I think that the capability for testing will definitely be increasing amongst healthcare organizations. I can tell you at Health Partnership, we have the ability to test. I think what's key to, in a way to answer this question, I think what's key is good coordination and collaboration between providers and the health department. I think that'll be very important because it's really the health department that collects the cases and they can put together a good picture for what's happening on a community level.
Mm-hmm. Are you satisfied with the communication you're getting from the health authorities?
I think I am. I think our administration is pleased with the proactiveness of a lot of the local agencies around, including the Johnson County Health Department. I think one thing we could use more of are more masks. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably our biggest need. We're always trying to order more, but they're on back order. So that's one thing that we would like more of. But as far as coordination and communication, so far so good.
How important are those masks? I've heard different things about how effective they are or ineffective they are. What can you tell us about the masks?
Right. So the thing about masks is that they are helpful for a patient who's sick to not transmit sickness, to not transmit that illness to other patients. Now, to be clear, there's more evidence for hand washing than there are for masks. So that to be clear is the most important measure. But if someone is sick, you wearing the mask is not as protective as the person who's sick wearing the mask. Mm-hmm. So for that reason, any patients that come through our doors, if they have any upper respiratory symptoms, it's important for us to make sure we give them a mask, a basic surgical mask. And that's any patient who has respiratory symptoms. And, you were asking, Steve, a little bit ago as far as recent experience. To be honest, this is most reminiscent, it's even more reminiscent of the seasonal flu that happens mm-hmm. every year, but although the mortality rate is, it's different than COVID-19. And actually even the measles outbreak, which mm-hmm. occurred a few years ago because of a lack of immunization. So those, I think, are probably more relevant examples.
But just to recap one important point, you're mm-hmm. saying that wearing a mask is important if you are the one who's infected.
Correct.
And you wear the mask and
Correct.
You're having trouble getting them. Dr. Boyd, you having trouble getting them too?
No, we have adequate mask supply. But I would reiterate the reason that it's more important for someone who's ill and coughing to have the mask is it provides that barrier. So when you cough or sneeze, those little droplets that contain virus potentially of whatever type spread, and they may land on the tabletop or land on the sink handle, as well as, you could just inhale it if you're close enough. And so that's why if someone's sick, the mask is a barrier of protection.
If you're not sick, yeah. Does wearing a mask improve your odds of not contracting corona?
I think the hand washing, if you are sneezing or coughing, you might be wearing a mask because you're sick, but, and then social distancing, a lot of those droplets are about a 6-foot process. So staying 6 feet away from someone.
From me to you right now.
Yeah.
Right.
That itself is protective as well. So, but I do think we want to be aware that masks are going to be important if people do become ill. And so having those for that population is something to keep in mind.
But you're saying you've got a ready supply of masks and Dr. Murad does not. Is there a problem there?
Well, I think if they're using it, and I can't speak to your clinic situation, but for St. Luke's Health System, we do monitor very closely what type of masks we have, which facilities they're at, with the idea that we need to have people ask for a mask if they have a respiratory illness. But mm-hmm. as some reports across the country have been, is masks are, high cost, on trying to buy off of websites or that kind of thing. And so, I think having the masks available for the ill is key.
If you're just joining us again, we're talking coronavirus today in a special edition of Up to Date, trying to provide and answer as many questions as we possibly can. Dr. Sarah Boyd is here from St. Luke's. Wael Murad, the Chief Health Officer with Health Partnership Clinic. They are here answering your questions at 816-235-2888. You can also text the word COVID, C-O-V-I-D, to 816-601-4777. Ken from Liberty writes this, Dr. Murad, does super hydration help in fighting the coronavirus, especially if you start hydrating at first sign?
So the treatment for coronavirus at this time is supportive care. So at the moment, there isn't a vaccine, there isn't a specific medication other than supportive measures. So part of supportive measures is adequate hydration that can help protect the kidneys. It can help, as far as the patient feeling feverish. So I don't know about super hydration. That's not a term I'm familiar with, to be honest.
I think it means drinking a whole lot of water.
So certainly, we don't want to go to extremes, but certainly it's important for a patient to be well hydrated.
Okay. Let's go back to some calls. Rick from Kansas City, Missouri. Rick, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. We were just wondering or curious if there's going to be, as with the traditional flu, an ebb and flow, a seasonal ebb and flow with this.
I was going to ask that question too, Dr. Boyd. When it gets warmer out, will we all be better off?
I think we're all wondering that question.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Because this is a new virus that we don't have history like we do with influenza, seasonal influenza outbreaks. We're not sure yet. So I think it's to stay tuned.
So we're hopeful, but we don't know for sure.
Right.
Okay. Let's go to Diana from Kansas City, Missouri. Diana, good morning to you.
Good morning. I've been hearing a lot about different places around the country where schools are closing or schools are not having as many public events with their children. And I'm wondering where's the cutoff line for people in Kansas City and Missouri where we stop having our children being involved things? What do we do about daycare centers? And medically, how would you address those questions?
How do we know when it's time to start closing schools and kids' events, Dr. Murad?
So this is very much this is one of the most rapidly evolving topics. It seems like every 24 to 48 hours we hear updates from different organizations, whether it be healthcare organizations, schools, other organizations that have congregations, whether it's shelters or churches. And so I think that's a decision that that every organization is making internally at this mm-hmm. time. I think what's important to realize about this issue is that we're all very interconnected. And what I mean by that is, let's say a school decides to hold virtual classes. And in fact, a lot of the school districts on the Kansas side have issued a lot of notices as far as what the thresholds will be for virtual classes. And of course, we have a lot of universities across the country that have gone exclusively to virtual classes. And so while it's an individual decision for that, whether school district or organization, it's interconnected in the sense that, let's say a school decides to have their kids stay at home. Well, that will directly impact a lot of working people because our kids are at home. So that's why it's important for organizations, healthcare, and otherwise to have preparedness plans in the event that their staff can't come to work.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Boyd, a question for you from Twitter. Marcel Harmon wants to know, are Kansas and Missouri hospitals and facilities prepared for an influx of patients? And what does it mean for patients with other problems, which I think we've already addressed?
Yes. So hospitals and healthcare organizations and public health are all partnering, for this preparedness. And every hospital, health system, organization will have their preparedness plans well in advance of actual events that they drill and they're looking at scenarios. So I think preparedness is yes. We do know when you start to have large influxes like they saw in China that sometimes some more elective procedures might change. But I think right now for our Missouri and Kansas we're prepared.
Dr. Murad, how many people have recovered from the coronavirus and how long are people generally sick? That's from our text line.
I see. Well, so I don't believe I have that information at hand as far as how many people, as far as the first part of that question.
Have recovered.
You know, I can say that, you know, again, we have one presumptive case, I should say, on the Kansas side and 13 patients under investigation where their results are pending. We know that symptoms typically show up within 14 days of exposure. As far as the typical recovery time, I might invite Dr. Boyd actually to weigh in.
Yeah, and I think that information is still coming out. Mm-hmm. And it really depends on the severity of illness. So, you know, anywhere from 2 weeks, some reports up to 8 weeks, but those were probably those very critically ill elderly patients. So
we have young kids at home. Again, a text question here. Young kids at home, not yet in school. Should we be keeping them at home, Dr. Boyd, at distance, at the park, or when we're out? What do you advise?
Again, to kind of echo the other physician's guidance earlier, I think just being aware, we have lots of other respiratory viruses, flu, and other things that circulate at certain times during the year. And so good hand washing is probably the most important. You know, being out, fresh air in your yard, not in a large group of people, that's perfectly fine. So I think just caution with your normal daily activity.
Dr. Murad, another text question. We've already covered some of this, but this person says they're anxious and nervous. He or she wants to know, what is the number of infected cases in the Kansas City area? How many cases are there in our metro?
So my message would be that while it's important to take this issue seriously, it's also important not to panic. Mm-hmm. So as long as we stick to what we know works in terms of the precautions outlined by Dr. Boyd a moment ago, that will give you the best bang for the buck as far as minimizing risk. And as far as the numbers, again, thus far, just one presumptive case in
just
Johnson County.
Just one confirmed case. We're doing testing on others, you're saying, so those numbers may begin to rise.
Correct. There are pending results out there.
Okay. Let's go back to some calls here. Let's go to Robin from Lee Summit. Robin, you're on Up to Date. We're talking all things coronavirus. Good morning.
Yes, good morning to you as well. I'm wondering if, in trying to set ourselves up for success against the coronavirus, with the hand sanitizing and cleaning and things like that, if we're not setting ourselves up for failure on the other end, once the coronavirus has passed, to be more susceptible to other viruses that may be coming through.
Hmm. Okay, any thoughts there? Yeah.
So if I understood correctly,
By using all these disinfectants now, are we setting ourselves up for problems later, I guess, with reduced resistance?
Yeah. Well, I think that number one, I don't think that I don't believe there's any evidence that frequent hand washing to protect yourself against a particular virus makes you susceptible more susceptible to another virus. I think that's a very good general guideline. I would say that the other thing is I think what I would say is that you know, the more people that adhere to what we know works, the more likely we'll individually be protected. In other words, when other people are protected, that actually protects us. And that's mm-hmm. a concept called herd immunity. Mm-hmm. So if other people are washing their hands, I'm automatically more protected.
Yeah. Based on our experience with infectious diseases over the years, are we going to be doing shows on Up to Date 6 months from now on this same topic? Or what would be your best guess, Dr. Boyd?
I think that both the awareness of COVID-19 as we see different countries and different areas dealing with it, as well as the response. And, you know, most of the time when there has been an event, people look back at what did we learn from that. So I think we'll still be talking about it. I just don't know in what context.
Well, I want to thank you both for sharing some very good advice with our listeners. We covered a lot of ground here, and I know we don't have all the information yet, which made your job even harder. Again, Dr. Sarah Boyd, an infectious disease specialist over at St. Luke's. Wael Murad is the chief health officer with the Health Partnership Clinic. Thank you both for sharing some good thoughts. We sure appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
After a short break, when we come back, we'll talk about the economic impact in the KC Metro and what we're seeing around town. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Want more from Up to Date and from me? Just go to kcur.org/Kraske and subscribe to Kraske Off Mic. You'll get updates on the shows you missed and a weekly column from yours truly. Sign up now at kcur.org/Kraske. Tomorrow we'll discuss changes to Kansas's Democratic presidential primary, learn why they're moving away from a traditional caucus and towards a ranked choice primary tomorrow on Up to Date, and good luck explaining ranked choice voting. But we're going to take a shot at it tomorrow here on Up to Date. Well, now a look at the economic impact of this coronavirus on the Kansas City area. We're going to talk about which of our area companies are most at risk at a time like this, how investors are reacting, and how Union Station is gearing up for the spring break season and the possibility of a big uptick in staycations as families reconsider springtime trips. With us, Bill Kaler is the president and CEO of FCI Advisors in Overland Park. Bill, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
Jerry Baber is Union Station's Chief Operations Officer. Jerry, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning.
Professor Michael Stillern is with the Economics Department over at Rockhurst University. Professor Stillern, nice to have you, too. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Well, Bill Kaler, let's start with you again with FCI Advisors. You've been telling people to take a deep breath and not panic here. Easy to say and tough for some people to actually do. Why is that your message?
Well, I tell you what, Steve, yes, we're going through something that is a bit unusual, mm-hmm. but it's no time to panic the market. And I, as an investment advisor, what we want counsel people to is to take a deep breath. History suggests we will get through this, and we will. There's things we can control. There's things we can't. Mm-hmm. So my watchwords today are self-control, patience, and balance, and that's what we're preaching.
Having said all that, what are some of your more panicky investors doing? What are you sensing? What are they saying to you, and what are they doing with their portfolios?
Well, we're not seeing panic.
Really?
We're not seeing panic. We've been doing this for 54 years, Steve. Mm-hmm. I'm the third CEO since 1966. We've been around a long time. We've managed $10 billion for institutions like the Kansas City, Missouri Police Retirement System, which we've been a client for over 50 years for us.
Mm-hmm.
We have received very few calls, and I attribute that to the position we've placed our clients in over time. Mm-hmm. And if you have that right allocation going into situations like this, again, it's the word is balance, stocks and bonds. Bonds have done very well, Steve. Mm-hmm. Bonds have done extremely well. And a balanced account this year is down 5% after being up 20% last year through all of this. So we need to step back. The message is step back, take a deep breath, as you suggest, and take it all in. Get the facts.
To what extent is the fact that this country went through the 2008 financial meltdown playing into this? I mean, your folks have been through something like this before, and they came out the other end.
Yes.
Is that helpful at a time
like this?
It's
very helpful. It's very helpful. One of the best things folks can do so as not to, say, freak out is recognize that markets do have these periods of time. We have gone through health scares, world shocks mm-hmm. in the past. Mm-hmm. Okay, you go back 100 years. We've had 11, 12 recessions. We've had world wars. We've had a president resign in disgrace in the 70s. We've weathered a lot of things in this country. Over that time period, Steve, stocks have compounded about a 10% rate mm-hmm. over the last 100 years. Now, mm-hmm. but they are long-term vehicles. And the reason stocks perform so well over the long term is because the price of admission to stocks are days and weeks like we've had.
Yeah.
3 weeks ago, Steve, the stock market was at all-time high, a human historical high.
Right.
And here we are 3 weeks later. We're talking to you and educating your listeners, your viewers on FaceTime Live about these things. So I think, first of all, I commend you for having us in today. It is a nice public service, and I don't want to monopolize all the time. I want Jerry and Mike to have some time here, too. But your questions are excellent. It's about balance, both emotional balance and portfolio balance.
Yeah.
And patience and self-control. And this too shall pass.
Bill's talking about KCUR's Facebook page. If you go to that, you can connect to us via Facebook Live right now. And we're wondering what the overall impact on the Kansas City economy is among those of you who are in business and are experiencing this time right now. We're curious to know what you're seeing out there. Again, you can text us via through the word COVID, COVID, to 816-601-4777, and you can ask questions that way. You can also call us, 816-235-2888. Bill, a final question for you. Do you see the markets continuing to tumble? What are you looking at? What's your crystal ball showing you in the next in the short term?
Well, nobody's got a crystal ball, Steve.
That's
right. Very clear about that. But what
you're supposed to have one in your position.
We are looking at this as long as the uncertainty is at a higher level as it is now, and the impact on the economy is uncertain. There will be volatility. We are going to have more volatility as long as there is uncertainty. I think that we're going to know a lot more in a couple of weeks. So here's something we might be looking at. Will Warren Buffett cancel the in 7 weeks from Saturday is the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting. 36,000 people descend upon Omaha. It's a great gathering. It's wonderful. Will they be having that? We'll watch for that. We're going to know a lot more. But we have to understand that volatility exists. And I hate to go on here too much, but Benjamin Graham was the professor of Warren Buffett. One of his great quotes is this: in the short term, the stock market is a voting machine. In the long term, it's a weighing machine, meaning emotion takes over in the short term. So
really
we are very much in that mode right now.
Yeah.
And so that's why the importance of a balanced portfolio with bonds and stocks is so important.
Professor Stillern, weigh in here.
I'd like to add what happened after the SARS virus in 2003. There was similar volatility. 6 months after the World Health Organization declared that the virus was under control, people could travel freely, the stock market rose almost 7%. A year after the World Health Organization declared that everything was okay, the stock market was up 14%. Yeah. So the stock market comes back after every epidemic, after every problem that we had.
Professor, let me stay with you for a minute. We know that some corporations in this area have seen negative fallout from concerns over the virus, you know, most notably AMC. Is there anything about companies in our region that either make them more vulnerable or insulated to economic impact or market anxiety? What do you see?
Well, the companies that are going to be most affected here in Kansas City are those that import a lot of their supplies from China. The United States imports over $700 billion of goods a year from China. This is primarily manufactured goods, electrically manufactured goods, electrical goods, and those companies that are dependent upon those imports are going to be most affected. For the most part, I think Kansas City is pretty much insulated from any severe economic setback.
Mm-hmm.
If you compare this with the SARS epidemic, and the SARS epidemic only lasted 6 months, if this only lasts 6 months, I think that the overall impact on the American economy is going to be very slight.
Interesting.
The economic impact of SARS was that global GDP fell by $40 billion, one-tenth of 1%, and GDP in China for the first quarter, whatever quarter it was down something like 4%.
Right.
So it was minimal.
Well, what are the major companies, Professor, most at risk in our area? Do you have a sense of how our local financial community will be impacted here? Or again, what are you seeing?
Any company that's affected with significant amounts of trade, any company working with a lot of travel is going to come to a halt. Financial markets right now are very, very volatile, and they are affected. Consumption is probably going to fall off right now, so that will affect all businesses in some way, but I don't think significantly.
Yeah. Go back to our relationship with China, because as you've said, the U.S. imports more goods from China than any other country. How is the virus affecting that trading relationship now?
I think that in those manufacturing areas where the people in China have been told to go home and stay quarantined for 2-3 weeks, all of that trade has stopped. But with respect to manufactured goods, you can make up that production 3, 4, 5 weeks from now.
Mm-hmm.
Overtime makes up for all the manufactured goods that you didn't have before.
Right.
So I don't project that that's going to be a serious problem unless we go on for a couple of years.
You've already mentioned the travel industry being impacted in some major ways. You're saying it might shut down completely or pretty close to it?
Well, I don't know if the airlines are shutting down, but a lot of people are canceling those trips. What kind of events are going to happen in Omaha in a few weeks? It just depends how people react to the virus and how quickly it spreads.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a large matter of uncertainty. I have a quote here from
somebody.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Kristalina Georgieva, who is the International Monetary Fund Managing Director, she said that the outbreak is the world's most pressing uncertainty. Hmm. And so right now, I would say we're all guessing what's going to happen a month, 2 months from now.
It's not lost on me that parts of Italy are ghost towns right now, too.
Italy's cities, Rome is a complete ghost town. I taught in Italy for a year. I got a lot of good friends there. And there's nobody at any of the monuments. The people aren't coming in. The students from Rockhurst we've called back. They're just under quarantine for a few weeks.
Yeah. Okay. Let me just move on to Jeff Baber again, the chief operating officer from Union Station here, as we talk about the impact of the coronavirus on the economy of the Kansas City area, which companies are being most affected. Again, our number 816-235-2888. Jeff, with spring break upon us here and as a destination site for families during vacation times, what are you expecting at Union Station when it comes to traffic during the upcoming spring break time? You anticipate a drop-off, a spike? What are you looking forward to, or do you have any idea?
Well, we're currently business as usual. You know, mm-hmm. Union Station, given the type of facility that we are, we're always focused on safety issues and health issues. We have constant meetings with security providers, our cleaning providers. We stay in contact with peers in our industry on best practices. And so we've employed all that. We have a panel of experts today in from MRI Global to talk to our staff and our tenants at Union Station just on best practices when it comes to infectious disease so that they feel like they understand facts and maybe not fiction. And they can employ those as, you know, as we go about our business at Union Station. So right now we're as business as usual with, you know, continuing our normal protocols, and we've stepped up some of our other cleanliness protocols as well.
Oh, what are you sensing and what do you see from folks who just are walking in the door? Any change in their behavior as you watch them walk around the Grand Hall?
We haven't. You know, so far we haven't seen a lot of change in behavior, either in the public spaces or in the attractions. You know, we did.
Or even in the numbers of people coming through the doors?
Today, yeah, no, we have not. You know, next week will be interesting. Next week is a big spring break week. So typically we would flex up pretty significantly to our attractions, and we'll be watching that and monitoring that. And we'll adjust as we see appropriate.
Would Union Station ever shut things down, even if various health departments wouldn't require it?
Anything is on the table for us. You know, mm-hmm. like I said, safety and health security is important for us. And so we're going to continue to be strive to be best practice. So if we see something, if we're made aware of something that we feel like we need to act upon, even if city, state, federal officials haven't, you know, made that decision, then we're prepared to act on that.
It's got to be a weird time for you. I mean, this is really something as a guy overseeing so much of this.
Yeah, you know, we are a multi-purpose facility, right? We've got businesses that are transacting. You know, we have office tenants and retail tenants. We have our own attractions. You know, we've got an Amtrak station. And so there's a lot of different pieces of the puzzle that makes Union Station special, quite frankly. And so we're doing the best we can to make sure all that stays balanced and informed make sure we're ready to adjust when we need to.
You don't oversee Amtrak. I want to make that clear, but what have you noticed any changes there in terms of their service?
Yeah. Right now, they haven't restricted any of the trains. There's usually around six or so trains a day at a Union Station in Kansas City. It's not as active as, you know, some of the coasts. But we got some communication from them. They are restricting some of their trains on the East Coast. They're not doing anything that right now. They have stepped up their own protocols on train car procedures. And like everyone, they're instructing their employees to use good sense. If you don't feel well, stay at home. You know, let's think about these things.
We're hearing that a lot these days, aren't we? Whole lot of that stuff. Peter called with this question, Professor, with tens of millions of dollars uninsured at risk and untold numbers of uninsured hospitalized, how will those costs affect the economy and ripple through that way?
An excellent question, Steve. Overall, the economy right now is overheated, overstimulated. The unemployment rate is 3.5%, the lowest it's been in 50 years. We're spending too much money. The annual deficit for the federal government is over $1 trillion. It's like a family with five credit cards that max out at $30,000. They're going out to eat, they're buying things, they're traveling, and all of a sudden they max out on all five credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen to that family? What's going to happen to the United States? We have no extra money to divert toward dealing with the virus that is facing the United States right now.
And that's a problem, obviously.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
You have to cut back expenditure somewhere, I would hope, in order to contribute toward the expenditures needed to contain the coronavirus here
and
in the United States.
You have the Fed cutting interest rates by a significant margin, by 0.5%. You have the president now talking about a significant tax cut despite the deficits you just outlined. What do you make of those ideas?
The Fed lowering the interest rates 0.5 percentage point is not going to help the economy if everyone is quarantined. You increase your money holdings by 10%, but you're quarantined in your house. What good is that going to do for the economy?
Mm-hmm. Meaning we have to keep spending money. That's what's good for the economy right now.
That's what's good for the economy. And we're doing that. I mean, we're doing an excessive amount of spending right now.
Mm-hmm.
But another additional cut like that is not going to stimulate the economy anymore. And the deficits are so high, you don't want another tax cut. We had a tax cut. We have excessive government spending. We got to learn to get that under control, or that will more likely cause a recession than the effects of the coronavirus.
You know, and yet as we sit here today, the deficit is hardly a blip on the issue menu in the presidential race that's now raging across the country. We're not hearing any talk about it. It used to be a big issue. It's not anymore.
It used to be a big issue for the Republicans, the conservative Republicans. That's certainly gone. I agree with you. None of the Democrats have taken up the issue. But it is a major issue that everybody is avoiding.
Yeah. Another question off our text line here today. Is there precedent in the Kansas City area for dealing with the impact of a disease epidemic? Any history of economic impact, factories, auto workers, Sprint, that kind of thing? Procter & Gamble.
The only thing that I could think of would be the SARS epidemic in 2003, and I don't think that significantly affected Kansas City at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'd have to go back to the Spanish flu in order to get some kind of an impact on Kansas City.
Bill Kaler, again, president and CEO of FCI Advisors. How steadily are your phones ringing in your offices these days?
Not very much, Steve.
Really? Still because of what you said earlier?
Well, because we're very proactive on communication. We've sent out a couple of communications over the last couple of weeks. Sent one out Monday called Maintain Balance.
Mm-hmm.
We sent out 3,000 copies of that. I'm happy to give you one. Basically reiterating what I'm talking about today.
Just for the record, I have maintained balance myself. I just want to get that on the table now.
I think balance is a very important word in the English language, one of the most important words around. And today, in the Wall Street Journal, I know you're teaching journalism also at UMKC.
Right.
One of the best journalists that I know of is a guy named Jason Zweig from the Wall Street Journal. He wrote an excellent article today. It's not real long, but for your audience, if you want to take a look at it, I thought it was very well written. It talks about looking in the mirror, and it really talks about controlling what you can control and not worrying too much about things you can't control. as an investor. From
age-old advice, right?
Excellent advice. And as an investor, Jason talked about this, and he even quoted Benjamin Graham, I believe. But the notion of, hey, take a look at yourself. Are you an investor or are you a trader? Mm-hmm. There's two types, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm an investor. Our firm is an investment firm, not a trading firm. Now, there are traders out there. And Ben Graham wrote about this 100 years ago. He called them investors, and then he didn't use traders. He talked about speculators. Mm-hmm. And that's what Jason wrote about this morning. Very, again, very well written. These times clearly identify folks who are more trading and more investors.
Yeah.
And frankly, sometimes, Steve, and I didn't, this is not my quote, and maybe it's Jason, I can't remember who said it. The quote is this: the stock market can be a giant distraction to the very serious business of long-term investing.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff Baber, real quick question. Do you have any special exhibits in the works at Union Station that might be affected by all this, or not really?
Well, we bring our temporary exhibits. Genghis Khan is in. It's not a high-touch thing, so I think it's good. And then we are opening three new areas in Science City, actually, just this next week. 13,000 square feet tied to kind of birth through seven-year-old programming. So, when Science City was built, it was really focused on kind of that 5 to 12-year age demographic as far as the interactives and the programming. So we've actually aged that down so that now if you've got a 2-year-old, 3-year-old, we have, designs from Boston's Children's Museum to interact with that level of kid and get them to be a lifelong learner at a much younger age.
Just got to wrap up here today. USA Today is reporting in the last hour that tax season 2020, the Trump administration now considering extending the April 15th tax filing deadline as the coronavirus spreads. So we'll keep our eyes on that. I want to thank Bill Kaler again with FCI Advisors in Overland Park, Jerry Baber, Union Station's Chief Operating Officer, Professor Michael Stillern with Rockhurst University. Thank you both, all of you very much. Sure appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Still ahead this week, I'll learn about the phenomenon that is Aldi grocery stores. Are the low prices, the friendly employees, or what is it that makes that place so appealing to so many folks? I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.